Well, 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 what is going on, one and all? Welcome to WHM On Screen Live. I'm Andrew Jupin. Alongside three other embattled individuals, we have Stephen Sadak.
Howdy, how's it going?
Going good, man. How are you?
Doing great. Happy to be back.
Yes.
Loving this balmy October weather.
You know it, dude. You know, a rare thing. How about this, you guys? We're talking Rangers losing in the preseason, Giants losing in the regular season, and the Yankees losing in the postseason. You love it, right, Chris Cabin?
All phases of life.
That's yes. What I mean, that's what this weather does to you. Is I mean, it's just a curse on us all, including all the athletics teams. And I have to ask, Stephen, the Sadak machine, does that make you Polish? Because in the
no, it just it grinds you down to about a 5'4".
Oh, like a Dr. Seuss dangerous. Device of some kind.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
And of course we have Bob joined, or I mean Eric.
That's Ferguson. Right. Well, I'm looking for the rendezvous point for a few small beers.
What time is it?
Yes.
Just tell me what time it is.
Yeah. Well, we don't need time. By the way, you know, if you're doing the audio version, you're getting half the show here. Look at this. I put on a robe I had.
That's yeah, dude. I'm dressed as an approximation of Comrade Joshua, I feel.
Yeah, yeah. Dude, that's closer. You got the beard for it. And I Eric, you're just missing. You need a special order, the old man glasses.
Yeah. Oh,
these are not as good. They need a bigger
block all the sun from every angle, kind of.
Yeah. Glass. Oh, you're right. The sides. Oh,
the side guys, like you're gonna be sitting at like a fucking like gambling machine all day.
Yes.
Something.
Yes.
I mean, I predict this Halloween costume to be everywhere. Oh, yeah. Not just because of our existence, but yes, because it's so easy and it's so like
the cheapest.
It's the cheapest. Such a good movie. Everybody's loving it. Second point. I think Eric has cleverly figured out a way to drink good beer at noon on a Monday.
Right, yeah, it's part of the costume.
Beers. Uh-huh, yeah. It's all a fun little costume. What?
You were dropping off a political radical who was trying to save his daughter before you got
yes,
here.
Yes, thank you. I would get a DUI for the revolution.
Is right. Speaking of the revolution, what's going on? Our revolutionaries in the chat, Graham Hill, Laffenstein, Sucked, Neth, I'm So, Rachel, Icy, Wiener, Rose, Foolish Hooligan, love seeing y'all back in the chat, Busiris, Mason, Pete Robles.
I can't believe yes. These chatters. These chatters are making you say, Icy Wiener sucked.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, hey, look. It's,
that's right.
It's a small price to pay. I agree with you, Stephen. Bob Ferguson's are going to be everywhere. I do hope some cosplayers take up the challenge and get a Stephen J. Lockjaw post attack.
Yeah.
One. You're going to need some putty. You're going to need some putty, but I want to see post attacks. I want to see group costumes. Let's have the whole, like, get your friends together, do the French 75. Man, you know, one of you can be Alana Haim in that hilarious fucking liquor store wig.
I mean, I even think the Benicio costume would be a lot of fun because, like, he's in a karate gi or a karate outfit for most of that movie. I think at the end, he's just got a denim like he's in regular, like, denim jacket
but I
kind
think
of a thing.
He still has the karate gi pants on.
Yeah, so that's cool. That's what I think. That's what makes it a costume. And it's also another pretty inexpensive one for that.
Yeah. The great thing about going to someone from one battle after another is they're all fairly cheap. Cheap Halloween costumes, I would wager. So I thought we'd do something a little different today, you know, before we get into box office and all that stuff. Forget birthdays, forget death days. I think we should take a little gander at some recent headlines from the entertainment biz and give our thoughts on some movie news, entertainment news.
I would love to.
Is it about that? Is it about that young ingenue Tilly Norwood that Variety can't stop writing about?
I love those
articles.
She OD'd. She OD'd on the streets of the grid, dude. She's dead.
Oh, mm-hmm. That's unfortunate.
Yeah, she fucking died horribly. It was awesome.
Too much megabytes.
Yeah, dude. She got derezzed on the streets of the grid.
I heard they had to pump her stomach. It was full of gigabytes.
Digital cocaine. It gets them every time.
Oh yeah, that's dumb. No, but here's another thing that might be a bad idea. Jason Bateman in talks to direct Universal Features take on John Grisham's The Partner with Tom Holland gearing up to star here. Now this is a Grisham tale about a lawyer that fakes his own death for a bunch of money.
Really?
And then someone tries to fucking fuck up his shit being hidden away or whatever, and I think Tom Holland is playing that guy.
If it keeps him away from James Bond, I'm very happy.
but I want to see, I want to see little Tom Holland in the courtroom going, this man needs to deserve to die. I want the death penalty on this little boy like you wouldn't believe.
Yeah, I could see that.
He's the one hunting. I assume he's the one trying to find whoever hid themselves. He's on the hunt.
Well, I think it's like, he's probably the guy.
No,
he's
the guy, the thing is, because the guy is trying to find out who's blowing up his cover. So I think he might be the guy. And then it's like,
trying to queer the deal.
And then he goes and tries to fucking find him.
Definitely Scrooge. It's absolutely Scrooge. Yeah. After him. That's, I mean, I think that's pretty clear. You know,
I was thrilled because my God, we're doing more adaptations of this dude. You thought it was over with.
That's good. I mean, hey, look, that's maybe more. I want a courtroom drama. Is what
yes.
I'm
you hated letters. The last good one. You hated Dude Number Two. Get
that's true.
Yeah.
Well, good movie. If you
make a good one. I'd like that.
Whoa.
One.
Get the hell out of here.
Uh-huh.
Hey, speaking of bad decisions and going back on them immediately. This is quite embarrassing. Do you guys fucking see this? Amazon Prime Video already quietly scrubbing the gunless James Bond artwork after everybody flipped out over the weekend.
I didn't even notice this even happened.
He's known for using guns.
Yes.
That's a sure thing. Is, dude. He's a now, gun guy.
I got a couple of these. So look, this was the Connery one. Mm-hmm. Okay. So this is on the left. If you went to watch these movies on Prime over the weekend, well, I think it was in conjunction for yesterday, because yesterday was like James Bond Day or whatever.
Happy birthday, James Bond.
So, yes, look at this. Look at this shit.
It's kind of great. It's the way that, I mean, also, it's a little unnatural pose to even hold a gun.
Yeah.
But it's a super unnatural pose to not hold a gun. So, oh, my hand is having tremors. Look at that.
There's nothing there.
He's rubbing his nipple.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, you're right. Getting a little harder for you.
He thinks he's about to have a heart attack. He's about to grip his arm right there.
He's got the pinky out in the gun holding hand. So like with the gun gone, he's also just got the pinky out. It looks so
that's
dumb.
Interesting. And now is that's a British thing. Like you, the teacup, you do the pinky out. With the gun, you do the pinky out. Yeah.
I think just for holding. I don't think that would be good when you actually fire the weapon, not having a full grip on it. Now, here's the really embarrassing one, though. Look what they did to my boy. Look what if you fucking went on Amazon yesterday and you wanted to watch GoldenEye, you just got this.
Dude. Rolling up his sleeves, I guess.
On a cufflink, maybe?
Jerking off a horse? Look at that.
Well, it's what you do when your boss is like, now I need you to come in on Saturday. You go, okay. Uh-huh. Yep. Yeah, I'll come in. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'll be right there coming in on Saturday.
This is just too much 90s shit. Like, the Grisham thing is 90s shit. And this, like, the E.T., like, let's put the radios in for fucking... Why? Who cares? We're done with this.
Of all the social problems in the world right now that Amazon could be putting their massive resources into solving, the guns on the James Bond posters would be fairly low on my list.
He's not the one going into the schools with that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah. Really isn't.
So speaking of the 90s, Chris Cabin, final news item of the week here. And this one, I'm kind of excited for this. Dude's got a decent-ish track record. Resident Evil, the new production from Zach Cregger, casting Severance breakout Zach Cherry, True Detective's Callie Reese, and another fella there. What's this guy's name? Oh, Jonah Wilson from Twisted Metal, which I do not watch.
No. I have not watched it.
But the three of them added into this movie. Callie Reese specifically, dude, that's like, I need a badass in there. You know, you can see Zach Cherry's probably going to get like the horrible fucking nerd death along the way.
Yeah, you're gonna want to sign up for our Craven tier to hear our thoughts on Zach Cregger's Barbarian. But I'm a big Zach Cregger fan, a movie fan, not a big fan of the Whitest Kid, you know, FYI. But big fan of his movie work,
right?
And it's just kind of an interesting thing. Obviously, he's on the carousel, and now you have to do something, and it's Resident Evil, and there's never been a good Resident Evil movie, so it's like. I don't know. We're going to see.
People will fight you on that, Steve. I agree with you completely, but people love those dumb movies for whatever reason.
The middle section of the Paul W.S. Anderson gets a lot of defense. I think one of them is passable, but the rest of them are trash.
I can imagine it's a good hangover fare. You know what I mean? For a lot
of
those.
But that's not like, what they're arguing. They're arguing it's legitimately genius good. Because of screens on screens. And
dude, it's just a zombie action movie. It's never going to be any of that. No. But with Kreger at the helm, this could be fun. I haven't played one of those games in a really long time, and I feel like we're on the fourth remastering of part four or whatever the shit. I don't understand. I guess we're just like making graphics look better every time. I feel like there's a lot of new editions of games that I played close to 30 years ago.
Do they remaster Twisted Metal yet? Can I get that remastered?
I'm sure you can, dude. I'm sure it's just in time for that TV show you're not watching.
I'm not a fan of remastering those Tomb Raider games because I like to jerk off to a lady that looked like one of Gumby's blockheads with huge tits.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. If I can't jerk off to a chick that looks like goo, what am I even doing?
Well, that's a challenge.
You see the blocks on her? Oh, my God.
Exactly.
Look at them polygons. Now we're talking.
So, I don't know. Interesting additions to that cast. I thought this guy, this Jonah Wilson, I thought that was the name of the dude who, that new Chewbacca, but that's a different...
Oh, no, that's Jonah something or other.
Something or other, yeah. Yeah. I was like, ooh, Chewy in Resident Evil, but it's just this guy. I don't know, does he play like the clown or something? I don't know what goes on the Twisted Metal show.
I haven't gone near it.
Just FYI.
Oh, yes.
Junis Suato... Sotomayor,
pardon me,
I knew I was way off. Yeah.
Can we get Junos Sotomayor for the table, please?
Junis Sotamo.
I thought you were saying a Supreme Court justice name for a second. Some Jonah Santamayor, please. Thank you. Make it snappy.
I can't wait to read his scathing dissent. So anyway, that's some news items in the entertainment biz. Now for the big news items, man, we want to check out what's going on at the box office. This is a segment we like to call Highest Gross. All right. It's been a nice long time since we've done a Highest Gross segment. So, switched out to all new movies. It would almost have to be since the last time we did this, I believe, was in July. So here we go. Coming in at number five. Maybe some quick thoughts about this. I think maybe just Steve and I saw it. But Conjuring, The Last Rites, still kicking it at the box office, if you can even believe it here.
You know what's funny? I literally had a ticket for this movie, and when you guys told me the runtime, I unfandangoed it.
Did a little exchange, did you?
That's right. Yep.
I love the fan. That's the best part about the Fandango app is the ability to get a refund on almost any ticket if you do it in a timely fashion.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And just, you know what? It's like, I'm gonna get to it eventually. Put that right in my Fandango credit, and I'm gonna use it to buy a movie ticket someday. So don't worry about it. Yeah, it's a great
system. You got bad gas, and you're like, "Do I really want to see The Conjuring: Last Rites?" And,
yep.
You know, I'm just gonna.
That's not why.
I mean, you weren't home farting your ass off, Eric.
It was the runtime, is what I'm going with.
Come on, but like a midday showing, you can fart your brains out. The fucking place is not going to be that packed.
That's fair.
And I will say, this Conjuring, I did see this. This is probably my favorite of the bunch because it's the last one. Finally, theoretically, we are done with this shit. And I'm like, I after the last one, which was the worst one by far, I think.
It is, easily, yes.
I was like, at least this one is legible. It is long. It's way too fucking long. But like, I was like, this is legible. This is easy to get through. The fucking marriage plot is stupid, but whatever. And maybe it's over. Maybe this is over. Thank God.
I was kind of hoping that Patrick Wilson was going to have a heart attack during that ping pong game. I was like, come on.
Right there.
Because they are teasing this whole movie that like he's going to drop dead of a heart attack. And you start thinking to yourself, like, all right, like I've watched all of these movies. I've looked at their Wikipedia. I know that he had like a stroke towards the end of his life and died 5 years later. Like, so you're then like pathetically using knowledge of these people's lives, or at least I was, to be like, boy, are they going to kill him a different way in this? And like, of course, none of that fucking came to be.
They should have him. You know, there's going to be more of these, Chris. There's going to be more of these. This is very profitable.
If it's the TV show, whatever. But if there's another one of these, I'm going to be very sad.
But what if in this other one of these, if they continue this and Patrick Wilson has, he strokes out, he's like has a big stroke, and then he's like a ghost helping Lorraine from the other side.
Ooh, you know? Yeah, I like that. I kind of was wondering if there was going to be some she sees him on the other side.
And even better, and after you help her from the other side, you could finger her from the other side as well.
That's right. Technically true. Yeah.
Definitely could be too.
I would like to be clear. I would not like to see any of this.
But
I
Chris, would, what if he gets to that other side, he thinks he's going to help out, but then he's in jail with all the other people. All the other souls he screwed
afterlife
over.
Afterlife jail. He's in afterlife jail. Okay.
That's what laughter life is.
Okay. And I was not aware of that. I'm sorry, other ghosts. Newbie here.
You ever heard of hell?
Sure. Yeah, but there's another part of it too, you know.
You're not going there. What are you, fucking stupid?
There's no other part of it.
I might hit limbo. I might get limbo, and that's what limbo I'm really
if you're lucky.
Yeah, that's what I want.
This movie is not in limbo. Week five, another $4 million rocking this fucker up to 168 domestically, 458 million globally with a budget of around $55 million. So yeah, this is just fine, and it's paying for Warner Brothers to do some other things, like a movie we're going to be talking about at length later. So I'm here for it. Something I was not here for. Oh, Steve, you got something?
No, I agree. It's totally inoffensive. The ending is really the worst part. It's just like, that I want to see this woman's wedding is just like, I don't. I really do not. You know what I mean?
No.
We'll see.
Also the fact that you would invite former haunting people to your daughter's wedding, dude, you have no fucking friends.
We have to have a seat for Annabelle. We have to have a seat for Annabelle at the wedding. Come on. Let's have her come through.
Honey, this is someone who I fought a ghost for them once, so be nice.
You got to be like, oh, fuck. Well, that's one of those wedding invitations you get and it pisses you off because you're like, fuck, now I got to go.
Yep.
They solved our ghost problem. We have to go. Now we got to buy her a fucking present. We got to get a hotel for the night. God, this is going to cost.
Yes, if you don't get something good off the registry, they're going to bring that ghost back.
Exactly.
Lily Taylor's arguing with Ron Livingston. He's like, can't we just send a freaking gift?
He fixed our car, okay?
Lily Taylor guesting at that wedding. Ron Livingston, nowhere to be found. I guess it's possible that character died before the events of that film.
Or divorce.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I mean,
a lot of these extreme haunting marriages aren't really going to last. I would wager.
Stress test, and they fail. It happens.
Yeah. Speaking of stuff that happens, sometimes it happens that movies like this come out. Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie.
What is this?
I don't fucking know. It's some television show that we've made into a movie that grossed $5.2 million in its second week. $33 million globally. It's the only kids movie out now until Thanksgiving, so it's got some runway, but like,
Gulliver's Travels? They get small and they go in the house.
Nice. I don't know about that. The only way I know about this movie is there's been an advertisement for it above one of the exits to the subway in my neighborhood. So I don't know. I think it's a Netflix show, maybe, or it's a somebody TV show, Peacock, maybe.
Each episode begins with the live action Gabby playing in her bedroom. She then unboxes a miniature package received in the dollhouse delivery brought to her by the Meow Meow mailbox.
Oh,
that is a catalyst for an adventure inside of the animated world inside her dollhouse.
So I'm on board now.
Yeah, Eric, you on board for Gabby's Dollhouse, the movie? Hold on tight, it says.
Changing out my Fandango credits going somewhere.
Yeah. Gabby puts on her cat ears headband and shrinks down with her stuffed toy Pandy Paws, who comes alive to surprise. I feel like I actually sound like I'm doing one of those. It's always the best when
Mad Libs.
The Macy's parade when they have to like the announcer has no idea what the fuck they're talking about. Gabby puts on her cat ears and headbands, shrinks down with her stuffed toy Pandy Paws, who comes alive. Gabby has a hug attack. Oh, and now it's blowing down Fifth Avenue. Bye.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And now Gabby's dancing outside of Macy's with Santa. It does sound like that copy that like Al Roker's got a fucking gun to his head being forced to read.
And here's a gentle green giant here with broccoli and peas to give us all the vitamins we need.
Oh, after SpongeBob Gabby. SquarePants in the land of what the fuck is this?
I do have to ask though, who is the is that Kristen Wiig?
It is Kristen Wiig.
Okay,
it is
I've been seeing this poster everywhere, and like I've just been seeing her face. I'm like, wait, is that Barbara Compton or is that Kristen Wiig?
No, it's Kristen Wiig. Yeah,
she's there because you didn't like Wonder Woman 1984 enough.
Yeah.
Okay. Where's Kristen Wiig? She's
the one with
the silver haired girl?
Yes.
Oh my God.
She's not the 17 year old girl.
Well, no, I know that, but I thought there was no way this other person on the poster could be fucking Kristen Wiig.
No, it's sadly Kristen Wiig.
Oh, if I get my face closer to the computer, yeah, there it is. That's
her next on her docket is Masters of the Universe doing the voice of Roboto.
Okay.
And then something called Cut Off, which is seems like a Jonah Hill directed dramedy.
Well,
she's
a good talent. I like her. So
I do. No, I do. I root for her, but I just
won't be checking out whatever this shit is. Because again, it's not for me. If your kids fucking like it, whatever. Sure.
I'll be there in the bathroom.
Oh, dude.
They're not letting you in, my friend.
You're getting arrested. If you have the Modelo's, you're getting arrested.
I think beer or no beer, he's getting arrested.
A few small Gabbies.
Oh man, moving right along here. I think it's one of the best of the year. Others may differ from my opinion, but in at number three for its first week, The Smashing Machine. Steve Sadek wanted to give you a minute here to talk about it because you recently got to it.
I did it this weekend. Tepid response from me, man. It was just okay. Like I think The Rock and Emily Blunt are great in it. Their domestic scenes are the best things in the movie. Him hulking out, but also like it's all like this controlled rage when he's dumping out that shake that she made. I was cackling.
Oh dude, yeah, because she made it wrong or whatever.
Yes, it's got the wrong milk in it or whatever. It just
I told you, it's a banana and a half now. It's a banana and a half.
She's like, last week it was a half, but but this week it's a banana and a half. And he's just like, but thank you so much. I really appreciate it. Appreciate it. And it's so the tension there is so good, and they're good. They have great chemistry together. Yeah. The MMA of it all, I think the movie doesn't do a very good job of, I don't think those scenes are particularly well filmed. I think the movie's actually really well directed, but I don't find those scenes terrifically exciting. I don't think that like
how he captures the actual fighting, you mean?
Exactly. And like in boxing movies, it's very clear when like, oh, you got to hit the eye because that's what his weakness is. And like, it's very dumbed down boxing, but as a film goer, like it lets you understand like what the strategy is and how you're going to win and how you're going to lose. There's a little bit of that with the illegal knee to the head stuff. I also just don't care for MMA, which might be a bit of a hindrance on me.
Right.
But ultimately like the ending, which I'm not going to spoil, but like the title card comes up after the whole events of the film. And there's a little bit of a postscript where you see something that's a little different than the rest of the movie, but it's just like, hey, FYI, these guys, you know, only made this much money, and now these new UFC fighters make millions of dollars. This was his story. His name is Mark Kerr. And I'm like, the money was never the point of the movie. So I don't know, like leaving it on that note kind of, it underlines what I think is a problem in the movie. I don't know what the reason of this movie is. I don't know if it's a domestic drama. I don't know if it's a sports movie. I don't know if it's whatever it is. If we're trying to make the MMA, are we saying something about MMA? Are we saying about something about the violence of MMA? Or are we saying something about anything really? It just sort of is what it is, and I think it for some reason it just lacks intensity and to me reason for being.
The reason is Oscar night.
Yeah. For The Rock. Yes, which I think he's very good in, and so is she. Yeah. She's great.
I think the thing with the money is just trying to highlight again like this, it's from a like thankless point in this sport's existence where like you couldn't even say like, well, you know, Mark Kerr got the shit knocked out of him and he had to learn how to lose, but at least he was making millions of dollars. Yeah. Like, that dude's just fucking shopping at Costco like everybody else and doesn't have a great life. I'm sure he's pretty thankful this movie got made about him. You know what I mean?
Oh.
So that's how I took the money thing.
I 100% agree with that. And I think it also has to do with, like, the playing off of, you know, what's the difference of how you see yourself versus who you are in the world and when those moments have to actually, when you have to come in conflict with that reality, like, and like, that's the whole thing is that like, he is obsessed with this vision of himself for a good portion of the movie. And then he has to deal with the fact that like, in reality, he's just another guy who did this. Yeah. Like, he's not anybody special. He just did this.
That's what I think it's not him that realizes that it's the real version, which is sort of a bit of a difficult thing to deal with. I don't know. It really just kind of didn't work for me, but I don't hate it or anything like that. It just sort of was like a low level. Like I was just kind of really disappointed by it because I think it looks good. I really like the use of diegetic music throughout, like that just centers you in the time.
Big time.
And in not an annoying way. Like it's always like music that's like playing in, you know what I mean, in a doctor's office, that's the right thing, but it's also the right volume, which is something that I don't think diegetic music gets very often, or like there's always a TV on or something that, right. You know what I mean? It's just, I like that part of it. I think that the costume design, the production design is really good. It just, I was just waiting, Steve, for it to happen.
Let's drop those stars. How many stars?
I gave it 3 out of 5 on Letterboxd.
Right. There you go.
It's not too bad.
Yeah, you know, I have to say, I think this is a great example of the potential value in a platform release, because A24, my friends, they just went wide with this fucker, as wide as you could go, and it grossed $6 million. It's the lowest opening weekend gross of a DJ film, which, I mean, it does not matter. That's just a statistic, and of course, obviously, it would be, considering the kinds of movies he normally makes, so that's not indicative of anything, but I do think, like, they really should have given this a beat, and it's like, because it's only now, like, you released it on October 3rd. Like, October is when you see, it's like the official start too, if you're trying to like get something into awards season. October is like that first month where it's viable, and like, platform that shit. New York and LA, give it a weekend, give it two, see what goes on, see if you can build word of mouth, and then spread it out, because now you've blown your wad. You opened $6 million everywhere. You can't expand it anymore. There's no way for this to get any kind of word of mouth going to the point where it'll stave off like losing theaters. So like, they totally screwed themselves on the release of this, unfortunately. But you know, maybe some folks will find it. Maybe they'll do like a re-release kind of closer towards the holidays or something.
Do you think it's going to hurt the nominations possibilities?
No, I don't think so, because I think enough people are going to be at least talking about him.
For sure. I think she's really good.
Yes, I think Emily Blunt was also really great in the movie. And I do agree with you that the parts that I was paying attention to the most were their domestic scenes. And honestly, anytime outside of the ring.
Yep.
Mainly because I don't care about mixed martial arts. I really don't. So it was just like, get me more about the people. And so I was receptive more to those.
But I do think the movie needs to, and I agree with you. I think it's the movie's job to make you care about the MMA. And
It
falls flat on that. Except the opening scene is pretty cool with when you're doing the DV version and then it turns into whatever. You know what I mean? Like that was actually pretty compelling. But other than that.
Pretty compelling. We'll talk about it at length a little later in the program, but in its second week of release, Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another, in its second, $11.1 million. And yeah, you know, the great success of things like Conjuring Last Rites are why, you know, this movie doing, let's see, where are we here? Globally, $102 million, globally, $43 million. Domestically, on around, there's been a lot of reports of the budget, so we'll say 135 million. Like, The Conjuring being so great in the black is why it doesn't matter that this isn't doing gangbusters. But it's still, you know, looking at it, what are we here? Jesus, like $12.8 million in IMAX, like this weekend alone. Pretty wild. In the 2 weeks together, rather. I've seen it on IMAX twice. We'll get to it more later. But pretty great that it was able to kind of hold in and wasn't just like a week.
I could see this coming back like towards the awards season, getting like that oppie IMAX re-release kind of thing.
They'll definitely look at like what all is going to be in IMAX like around the end of the year. And I bet you anything, you'll see like split screens of, you know, some show times it's whatever movie, other times. Mm-hmm. One Battle getting back in.
Because next week we're going to have Tron Ares, I assume, taking up a good amount of these showings. So they're going to want to get it back at some point.
Yeah, for at least 1 week. I'm going to guess with Tron Ares. We'll see. But
yeah, I don't know I don't know what kind of legs that fucker's going to have.
Yeah.
Speaking of a film with no legs, because it is supposedly a one and done, like just for this week. Because it's not really a movie, it's a filmed record release party, technically. It was number one at the box office. Taylor Swift, the official release party of a showgirl. It was just those three, four, and five October in theaters.
Is she singing a song at least, or what are we talking about? Like,
don't they play the album or something?
Yeah, I don't particularly know what,
I have no idea.
I just heard Chris, anyone in the chat, yeah, just call it out.
Chat, please. Let us know if you've seen this and what this is. I just heard Chris Cabin groaning. We're going to lose our precious audience, all the young people.
The Swifties are logging off right now.
Let's just say it's great.
I'm fairly Swift agnostic. Like, if I hear some of her music and it's okay, I'm like, cool. I don't search that out.
I agree with you. I feel like if she turns out to be God, I didn't wrong her too much by going so against it.
Sure.
I'm agnostic.
I'm so Rachel in the chat says it's basically an album listening party with a music video attached at the end with some behind the scenes stuff from the tour.
So at least you get to see here. It's not, I just thought it was just like, aren't we excited about, like, you go to the theater and it's just her being like, this album is great.
It's
go
just this it. On yeah, the yeah, screen. Yeah, yeah. Hi, this is Taylor Swift. Thanks for coming all the way to the theater. You're not going to see me or anything. I'm in my pajamas recording this in my huge house, but here's my record. Here's track one.
She could do that. She could just,
she absolutely could
just be nothing. Yeah. Yes, this is,
and they would love her for it. Mm-hmm. Love her for it.
But I mean, this is no Eras Tour opening. Yeah. I mean, 33 million kind of whatever, and it's gone after this. So, you know,
The Rock would like 33 million this week. I'll
I'm sure. I'm sure you would have. But again, you know, DJ, we know you're watching. It's not about the box office with this one, dude. Elsewhere, just wanted to get in something here. Was just featured at the New York Film Festival, and Focus Features is already flushing it right down the toilet. But Ronan Day Lewis's Anemone released 700K, which would be fine, except for the fact that for some reason, Focus Features put this bad boy on 865 screens.
What on earth are you thinking? What is happening in your brain? Daniel Day-Lewis matters that much? Are you crazy?
Dude, no. I honestly feel there was multiple meetings and it was exactly like that. Guys, it's Daniel Day's film out of retirement.
Right, grand return. There's going to be roses tossed at us.
If it was a P.T. Anderson movie with fucking Daniel Day-Lewis, that's another thing. Daniel Day-Lewis and his son making a movie together with Sean Bean.
Shouldn't films have to be made by filmmakers?
Did the Ballad of Jack and Rose do crazy numbers that missed it? No, it did not. Like, no, there are Daniel Day-Lewis movies and Daniel Day-Lewis movies. And this is a Daniel Day-Lewis movie. You know what I mean? Like, anyone should have seen this coming.
Daniel Day lose us with this one.
I did not see it. Friend of the show, Sean Weiner, saw it at New York Film Festival and thought it was fine. It's sort of like Daniel Day and Sean Bean are acting against one another, and then anytime they're not acting, it's just kind of like a music video vibe.
The last movie that he's known most for is a movie like partially at least about a very barbed relationship between two people who think they're brothers, and then you make a movie about a barbed relationship between two brothers as the comeback movie that nobody wants to see. What the fuck? What are you thinking?
Well, because you're living in, you know, you're a
DaVita Loca.
Yeah. I guess so. That's
whatever.
But yeah, I saw the number 865, and I almost fell off my chair. That's some bad planning. That's all the money your movie's going to make.
Because you know what? To say what you will about the Smashing Machine, like, I can see them being like, at least we're going to get a weekend to the box office for ourselves before Tron Ares comes in and blows doors off the place for at least one weekend. We know that it's going to have one weekend where it's really going to feast. Who knows what happens after that? But like this, I'm just like, where was your, if you're, the only thing that makes sense is that you really thought Daniel Day-Lewis on his own, just him, was worth this. And it just doesn't make any sense.
Also, like, not really any advertising for this.
No.
I mean, and again, the Smashing Machine, I saw tons of trailers and TV spots. Like, people knew that movie is coming out this year, week.
Yeah. Anemone. Just had to put that out there.
Is it Anemone or Anemone?
Is it Anemone?
I don't know.
I have no idea.
Phenomena.
Chat, let me know. Phenomena. Is it like a sea anemone? Don't you say sea anemone?
I guess we'll have to defer to you, Steve. You're the book guy.
You are the book guy.
Mr. Book learned.
Oh, Steve got it. Somebody says Steve's got it. Okay.
Okay. Yeah. So there we go. Someone didn't want to say it in the chat, but they then said it anyway.
So that's a word. We're led to believe that's an actual.
Yes, that's an actual word.
It's an actual word.
I thought it was like the name
from the word book, which is called the dictionary.
Oh, all right.
Ooh, dictionary. Look at you.
Mm-hmm.
A plant of the buttercup family, typically bearing brightly colored flowers. Anemones are widely distributed in the wild, and several kinds are popular garden plants.
Nope, not a word. That's just a flower.
And yes, Steve, anemone, short for sea anemone. A sedentary marine coelenterate with a columnar body, which bears a ring of stinging tentacles, get this, guys, around its mouth.
Yes, there's all kinds of saw trap words in that fucking sentence. Just too many of them.
You mispronounced my favorite flower. You're going to die now. Hello, Andrew. You're going to die from an anemone. It's called an anemone, actually.
I'd like to point out that I never actually tried to say it. So
I'm going to take you to Mexico to see if you can pronounce things right.
How about this? We're going to be pronouncing things all sorts of incorrectly on these two new tier offerings we have. Because you guys know about this Craven tier we've got?
Oh, I know I do.
New tier on the Patreon, patreon.com/WeHateMovies. It's a video tier where you get, yes, all of the audio stuff lumped in, but you get two new video programs and want to give you the deets on October's situation for this. So first up, of course, is WHM After Dark. That is our AMA-style Q&A chat show, which airs monthly live. And the next one is going to be the 21st of this month. It's a Tuesday night, 8 p.m. Eastern time. We will be live on Patreon talking about whatever you guys want us to talk about.
We will answer your questions. Like right now, on screen live, people chatting, asking me, I'm not answering any of that crap.
No.
Why not? Looking at that crap.
You can't.
Crap. No, do it. Wow. After Dark, you can ask us about anything. We talked about music last time. We talked about movies, anything.
And I might bring my kitten out again if he's not being a complete son of a bitch.
Full we'll find out about pussy show. Patreon.com.
Look at that. And then later on this month, the 29th, we are airing the first of our new show, Scaredy Cats, which is a show where we sort of break down modern horror. And we teased it up at the top already, but yes, that's right. The first episode dropping on the 29th. We're going to be talking up and down about Barbarian. Hell yeah. Look at Felipe's artwork here. It's the best we've ever looked, frankly.
Yes, it looks just like me. But, you know, this is a video experience. It's going to be sort of like this. You'll have a video. You could watch it, a whole episode, or you could enjoy the audio experience instead.
That's right. You know, we may be using some like visual cues to exemplify talking points. So like, that's why, you know, we want you to watch this so you can see what we're doing. You can see Eric's Halloween costume and so on.
We're going to be talking a lot about Richard Brake. That's going to be exciting.
Oh, definitely. I'm going to have to look it up. I was just watching something and Richard Brake popped up and I was like, hey, look at that, Richard Brake.
He did you wrong.
So yeah, 10/21 is the October After Dark, and then 10/29, the first episode of Scaredy Cats airs on the Patreon as well. And then also that very next day, that end of the October is pretty packed because coming up on the 30th, of course, it is our Q3 commentary, Friday the 13th, Minteri. Part two. Hell yeah.
Exciting.
That first one is like one of our best received commentary tracks, and I gotta tell you, this part two is edited and ready for release, and it is very funny. These movies just make great fodder to friggin' talk over. That's absolutely for sure.
Right. You sign up today. You can also listen to that original Friday the 13th commentary track. That's so many commentaries.
We are borderlining. It's not this one, but I think maybe the next commentary that we release will be commentary 40. We've got, there's coming up on 40 of these fuckers, which is great. And they're all, you know, on Patreon, except for one that's on a DVD set from Vinegar Syndrome.
And, you know, big friend, you know, Twilight, John Wick. We got them all, folks.
Absolutely. So there you go. Just had to plug our stuff. Richard Brake.
Yeah, they did it.
This is an ad by BetterHelp. Workplace stress is now a leading cause of declining mental health, with 61% of the global workforce feeling it more than ever. You can't escape work, but you can take small steps to care for yourself. A walk, some sun, a favorite song. Therapy is one of those steps, ongoing support to build resilience for whatever your day throws at you. Balance is tough. Getting help shouldn't be. Visit BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com today for 10% off your first month.
Chris Cabin, real quick, let's me and you squeeze in here talking about the new Jimmy Jarmusch movie, Father, Mother, Sister, Brother, that we caught at the NYFF. Last Friday? My God.
That hard sounds to believe. Right.
But we both dug on this one. I thought it was a return to form for Mr. Jarmusch. Sure, you want to give a little capsule description of what this sucker's about?
It's a trio of stories. One's about a father, one's about a mother, and one's about a brother and a sister.
Yep, so far. You got it so far.
That's about, I mean, and they're all about like different, like how you communicate with your family as time goes on, whether death makes it easy in some ways to communicate, even though, since they're not there anymore, to have all the weight of their existence on you and stuff like that. There's a lot of existential pauses, as you might expect from Jim Jarmusch. I really loved this. I thought this was very tender for him. The first part was my favorite. But I really thought both the second and third were very well done and really well performed. Tom Waits and Adam Driver, I thought, were really freaking great in that first one. And then I thought the trio in the middle were amazing with Cate Blanchett, Vicky Kripes, and Charlotte Rampling, crazy old Charlotte Rampling.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I love that it is. It's a return to form also in the sense of like the structural sense. It is a triptych of stories that are just the loosest bit related due to the theme of like family relationships. Like, that's it. There's no like characters sauntering in and out of the other stories. It's just everything is separate except like the theme that he's going for, which is, I love when Jarmusch breaks out his movies like this. It's like very Night on Earth kind of vibes, right? That's the Cab one that I'm thinking of.
Yes, that's the Cab one.
And yeah, Steve, I was thinking of you the whole like first half hour because the fucking Tom Waits performance as just like this old dad who's weird and living alone is quite great.
That's phenomenal.
Because I think the last time we saw him in a big-ish movie, was that Babylon? He's in Babylon, right?
Or Tom is in Babylon?
No. No, he's in Licorice Buster. Pizza. I mixed it up. The weird.
Yes, he is in Licorice Pizza.
The guy at the party. He's like, let's go fucking drink. And
he's with Sean Penn.
The Sean Penn part.
He's with Sean Penn. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, I was trying, because I was like, he was in like, what, Seven Psychopaths, Martin McDonough movie? Ooh.
He's in, Buster Scruggs, yes, he's in. He's the one who's saying, good night, Mr. Pocket. But he's also, he was in a very small part in The Dead Don't Die, the movie that he
did. I really
love it. But I know people, I understand why people don't like it, but I think it's really wonderful.
I'm just kind of looking for horror to watch, and I've been kind of on a weird Jarmusch kick for a little while. I rewatched Dead Man, rewatched Night Under the first time, did Coffee and Cigarettes again, so maybe I'll do that as well. Just kind of
You might hate it. You might very well hate it.
True, for sure.
Yeah, I love that, like, Dead Man.
It's I don't love it, but it is interesting. It's like him using all his Jarmusch powers to make like a really flat and his style
weird
of comedy.
I think it's an action zombie movie.
Yeah, it's certainly weird, but just in like that kind of expected Jarmusch way. I don't know. I felt it was him like pushing his style through a zombie movie, and it's fine, you know.
Yeah.
It's a lot of cool like upstate filming locations, which is pretty sweet. So yeah,
filmed
got that going for you.
Oh yeah, no, not this one. Maybe this one too, because The Dead Don't Die was filmed where I grew up. So
yeah, the first sequence of this movie, this new one, I believe, is like in the Catskills.
Interesting.
Possibly Berkshires, but it's like up there. And then the second takes place in Dublin, and the third in Paris, and it's like on location, really nice looking, very cool. So this will be out limited on Christmas Eve from Mubi. So look for that to expand, sometime in the new year. All right, gentlemen, let's get into it. How many times has everybody seen Paul Thomas Anderson's One Battle After Another?
Two. Just the ones.
One. I'm good. I got tickets for this Thursday. I'm going to go back. I'm so excited. Good stuff. Chris, how many times?
Dose.
Nice.
Twice.
Yep. Yeah, I'm actually really tempted to rewatch it again in theaters, even though there's some stuff I want to catch before it. But I just, you know what I mean? Like, it is.
Yeah.
It was that exciting. It was that cool. It was that a like revelatory cinematic experience. Like, I kind of want to do this again, which is very rare to go back to the theater for something.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the last time I went back to the theater, it was, I think, Dune Part 2 I saw twice in theaters. Mm. In the same weekend. That was some insane shit. Sort of unintentionally, last minute, saw it a second time. But, yeah, I rarely do the go back. So, like, when I do the go back, it must mean, like, something really struck me about this. And, like, from the moment I saw it, like, the Sunday of opening weekend, as soon as I left the theater, I was like, gotta get back, gotta get back, gotta get back, gotta see it again, gotta get back, gotta do it, wave of the future. And so I did last Friday, and it was still, you know, it's even better because you know where everything is going to land, and then you can just kind of like sit in it.
Yeah, so your asshole isn't so tight during the final chase scene. That'd be nice.
What a great chase scene. And you know what I do appreciate about the film is finally someone else, apparently PTA, agrees with me. These people that are obsessed with fucking Christmas, man. Whoa. I knew there was something going on with these people.
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, that Christmas Adventures Club, dude. There's some sick tickets in that group.
It's just such a funny movie, too. You know, speaking on the Christmas Adventures, and there's just so many great moments of comedy and levity in a tense movie.
Oh, yeah. Super tense. But that's like, go ahead, Steve.
No, even as Sean Penn, who as repugnant of his character as he is, and it like seethingly so, like from the top to the bottom, the way he walks around like Frankenstein's monster. But he's still very funny, too. Like even the first moment of her like making him get a hard on is fucking hilarious in a scene where you have no idea where this is going.
Well, because it's dealing with his tenderness. That's like what's so weird. I mean, that's what such an interesting way to get your in with this character is that like you get him at these tender moments, like her like seducing him and him actually feeling more for her than she does for him, clearly. And like that just bounces up the fact that he is so honored to be part of the Christmas Adventures Club. It's like it overtakes his whole being, and like you can tell Sean Penn just completely. I mean, the walk when he goes to get the fucking ram to go open the door. I laughed for like at 5 minutes straight.
It's so awesome because he's got a travel sized battering ram in the back seat of his truck.
I died. Oh my god! he puts down the flowers and takes the like. That's such a perfect little encapsulation of who he is and what he's going through.
And he sets the flowers down. He doesn't angrily throw them in the yard. He gently places them on the porch and then goes to get his travel-sized battering ram. Did you guys feel, speaking on the Sean Penn character is what inspired this thought, because I thought it both times I was watching it. There were definitely people in that theater with me both times that was not sure if they should be laughing at this movie.
Okay, yeah,
it was weird, and I was kind of like, I wanted to be like, it's okay, it's fine, I know you want to. Like, it was just weird. Like, you could feel all these moments where it was like this weird douche chill where there shouldn't have been a douche chill, it should have been laughed. And so, I'm
I mean, I think there's signifiers that you should laugh. I mean, you know, what's interesting about the movie, too, is the names are very compelling, very almost like Wes Anderson names, like Colonel Lockjaw, Sensei Sergio St. Carlos. That is a Wes Anderson character.
Yes, absolutely.
I think that like it's just interesting for Anderson. The last couple of movies, I think there will be like he hasn't done like epic in a little while. You know what I mean? It's been big movies. Like, you know what I mean? Need to be seen on the big screen. Like Licorice Pizza and Phantom Thread both need to be seen on the big screen, and even The Master as well. But and actually, The Master's pretty epic. But this is like it. This is like I'm in a. It's a big movie. It has big themes, big moments. It's just such a big experience, and that's why I it makes me want to go back to the theater, because I just, you know what I mean? Like, I want more of that in my life, kind of.
I think it's a great example of, like, you don't need to have, like, only Avatar be in, you know, premium large screen auditoriums, right? Like,
of course
this, you know, on its face is more like just kind of a like comedy drama that has a lot of tense action elements built into it. I've seen people like referring to it as an action movie, which I guess so, but I think that brings like a little baggage with it. You know, a lot of a lot of folks say, "Oh, PTA finally directed an action movie." I guess, but like there is this Killers of the Flower Moon, another Leo movie that I saw in IMAX. That's not what you would think is a necessarily like IMAX needed movie, but like seeing Killers of the Flower Moon, it was the same experience. Just like, whoa! Like there is an argument to be made for a large format for any kind of movie.
Right. And you know, the politics of the moment too, very, very compelling in this movie. I was thinking about when I, after watching this, there's not really a correlation per se, but it was reminding me a little bit of Eddington, which I felt was a little South Parkian in its take on the politics of the time.
Well, this is a much more hopeful movie.
Right. Than I'm just saying, I feel like Eddington did a little, they're both bad.
Yes.
Well, sure. Yeah.
I think that that's, I mean, I think that's, but I respect Eddington and this movie for, I think a lot of people are very sheepish about making real political movies that are real political movies and it, not hiding behind and not to be, again, not hiding behind horror to do these kind of comments. Like it's real. This is the real world that we're living in, even if it's a heightened version of it. You know what I mean? Like this is, and this is what I think is happening right now, sort of to a degree, and also through the lens of Thomas Pynchon and everything else.
And made in the USA, so you can't, you know, this is a homegrown movie, Mr. President, so no tariff.
It speaks to what, I think it was Andrew who was saying, like, the fact that this is, like, these movies of now, like, Eddington, something like this doesn't just come around, like, the fact that people didn't know how to take it in, if they should laugh or not, it's because laughter, like, you don't know if it like you don't know if your laughter is condemning you, right? Like you're like if you find this thing funny, do you find it light? That's not the same thing. You can laugh at something that is heavy. That's a different calculation, at least in my view. And I think that's exactly where this and Eddington have been sticking people. Is like they don't know how to take these things because they are dealing with some pretty spicy material. And like to me, this is the other to Inherent Vice. Where Inherent Vice, all of its paranoia and stuff is subsumed in the humor of it, and all the comedy that's coming out of like him sucking on the banana, all this stuff is like covering over this the destruction of LA. This all that stuff actually comes to the surface, and the comedy is kind of what's going on underneath, like the fact that you can't remember your revolutionary politics because you smoke too much weed and drink too much wine. Like that is funny. Like you can't do it because you fucked yourself up too much to do the thing you were supposed to do at the time.
And it also takes the air out of that some of that shit a little bit too, right? Yes, like when we see these things portrayed in movies, especially if you've watched anything that's sort of like Weather Underground coded or something like that, it is taken so seriously. And like in these scenes in this movie where it's like Leo outside the store just fucking yelling at Comrade Joshua on the phone and, you know, I'm going to find you. There's that, like, it's such an interesting way to present all of the stuff that we've seen in other movies, right? But it's presented in this style, in this way, with this kind of temperature to it. And God damn, it just works, everything about it.
And it's also interesting, like for Leo specifically, the difference between this character and Rick Dalton specifically, like because I think on paper they could be very similar. They're both washouts, both, you know what I mean, inebriated for various reasons, et cetera, et cetera, and that being a weakness for them. But it's the nuances that he gets in this character versus the nuances he gets in Rick. It's just, I think that he's getting a lot of plaudits for this role, and I think he deserves it. And also, obviously, Tiana Taylor is fantastic, like, absolutely fantastic in this movie.
Yeah.
Chase Infinity is her name should be above the poster. She's like the movie, and like she does for such a young actress. It's like to be able to do this and not. It's a really fearless performance, really funny performance. Her telling Sean Penn that his T-shirt is very tight,
dude.
It's one of the funniest lines. It's like such a like mean girl. Like it's exactly right for her age, and you're just like.
Yep.
If a girl that age told that to you, you'd think about it for months. You'd go, God, my shirt was too fucking tight.
Fuck. Yes, she just told, God damn it, she got me. Fuck. You know?
Yes.
But yeah, you know, she was great. I had seen her on that Presumed Innocent show where she's, you know, she's in it for a bit. She's Gyllenhaal's daughter and Ruth Negga's daughter.
She's not the presumed.
No, she's not presumed.
No. But
she's the innocent, if anything.
Right. She's not in it a ton, is what I was getting at. So it was cool to see her here. I think we got to get into him. We kind of mentioned him a little bit, but like Benicio, Benicio just being on this run, man, that I think now is going back to what, No Sudden Move, the Soderbergh.
Yeah.
Yes. Where he was great. And I feel like that was kind of like, at least from my memory, the first time in a while where we were like, whoa, Benicio's kind of like really doing it in this movie.
Yes.
He's really doing it in this movie. Yeah. And he was also doing it in Phoenician Scheme earlier this year. Like, this is like a massive year, I think, for him. But this fucking, just Sensei St. Carlos is just, it's such so a great good. Character. Like his, yeah. I love, I mean, and not we won't get too spoilery here, but like his major sequence where he's taking Leo through his store, and just you see how his world is connected and all these connections he's got, whether it's family or people he's helping out. And he never loses his composure. And that's, you know, he's just going through, do this, get this out of here, this, that, and the other thing.
Because he does this every day. Like, he's constantly dealing with one battle after the other. And you've been smoking pot on the couch for the last 16 years. It's different for people of color, and especially, you know, these migrants that he was trying to help out in the film.
Yep. And also, like, it's just all underplayed, like, again, which goes against Leo's being so big, he's being much more reserved. And like, just a line like, I've got a, he kind of just tells it like he's got a cat and has like, just FYI, I got a little Latino Harriet Tubman thing going on in my house. Like, the way he says it is just such a fucking funny, like, great delivery, and sets up what you're about to see. But in a very matter of fact kind of way, which is, you know, he's fantastic.
And I'm always a sucker for it, because you don't get in a ton in movies that he's in. But whenever Benicio is speaking Spanish in movies, I think it's awesome. And I loved that there's, I'm trying to remember, there's like no subtitling any of that, which I think is indeed the move. You understand it. So, but I'm sure certains who were already upset with this movie also got upset about that, probably, because find anything to piss your pants about, baby. But yeah, just, I mean, his whole thing and the way he sort of loops back into the movie, like, you think he might be gone for a little bit and you're like, well, that was nice. And then he's back and you're like, oh, that's even better, you know, because when he comes back, those are the moments that are getting memeified throughout the universe. But even when he's like, when he's helping Bob and he's like, Bob, you know, shoes off the mat, you get off the, you know, all that, stuff in the dojo, like, it's just, is really, really special. Wanted to point out also some French 75 people, just Alana Haim, really great. Jungle Pussy, Wood Harris, Regina Hall. Wood Harris, I'm always hyped to see and stuff. And man, he's just like kind of blinking, you miss it. He eventually gets out of the movie. But I was like, damn, just all these like little face, like real faces. Like Wood Harris has like a real face. Alana Haim's got a real face. Like PTA, again, doing a great casting job of making all these people feel totally real. Like even Leo, like the way they make Leo look in this movie, I'm real, a lot of people are talking about this, like his, like, whatever they're calling it, like dumb fuck era, where he's just playing like, you know, lower status idiots, like it's great. Like him playing lower status, I think, is really great.
I'm a sucker for a time jump in a movie, like a significant time jump. It's in playing with that aspect of it. And it's a bit of a getting the band back together too. And like, what hath we wrought and all this kind of stuff. I'm a sucker for all those themes. And I think that's what Regina Hall brings to it. Like her piece of just sort of like, she didn't Leo out. You know what I mean? She has been doing it. She's exhausted in this movie and it's really clear. And I think that's, you know, she's a really great, you know, avatar for what this kind of a life can lead, can wreck on you. You know what I mean? If you're not getting wasted every day,
right?
I get wasted every day.
Of course.
It's a cautionary tale of what it's like living a life like that. It's also a cautionary tale of, hey, listen, fascist, when you join up with other fascists because you think they love you, they're gonna fuck you in the face just as hard.
They sure will.
Not to spoil too much, but what an amazing final image.
Go see it.
You know what I'm talking about. Go see it. So we got to get going here. We are at the top of the hour. I want to get this in really quickly because I don't want you to have watched this for nothing, Mr. Siska. Let's talk about some shit you dug up. This is Secret Movie.
Yes,
All right, Tin Soldier, there tell us all about this master.
Look at this poster. This poster is so much more exciting than the film.
I like that De Niro beard. Is that a real thing? What are you talking? Like, is that,
he's got a beard in the feature film. Yeah, barely feature film, 80-something minutes. Tin Soldier, my goodness. I mean, what's great about De Niro in this movie is you realize he can sell a movie. Like, everyone else is kind of more, you know, not, they're fine. I mean, this has Jamie Foxx in it as a cult leader.
Okay.
Scott Eastwood is a former member who has gotten out, and he's like a quasi military-ish guy now. Uh-huh. And it's like sort of like a Waco thing where the government's trying to recruit him to help them storm the compound basically for this cult. And that's where De Niro comes in holding a manila envelope. And like when he's talking about like what's been going on, like, you believe it, you buy it, then you cut back to scenes of Scott Eastwood and Jamie Foxx, and you're like, that doesn't seem as good as what he was saying. Because it's like, that, he's really doing a great job of acting it. Jamie Foxx is kind of all over the place in this, and Scott Eastwood is driving around as usual.
That's what I was going to say. Is Scott Eastwood, he in the cult, is he the what they drive from town to town to get where they need to go? Yeah. And then the government needs that to, them to drive him in because he's a car.
Exactly. Does he have a flatbed? Does he have a flatbed?
He does have a flatbed. He's in good shape in this one. Probably some nice abs, although you didn't see it. The sin of the movie, though, I mean, it could have been interesting. The real sin is nonstop CG explosions.
Nonstop.
And there's one good car crash that looked real, though. So,
okay.
Yay to the car crash. If you want to watch a car crash, you got it here.
Nice. Do you think this is, because I always think there's two kinds of secret movies. Movies that intend to be secret movies. That it's just like, hey, look, let's just get up. Let's get $5 million. We'll pay the big actors and dump it on Amazon. Or was this a real movie that someone somewhere wanted to be a real movie that turned into a secret
movie? I think they wanted it to be a real movie. I feel like getting Fox and De Niro, it was sort of like an announcement for Scott Eastwood that then they decided to not do. By the way, I did this movie instead of another secret movie that I wanted to do because the other secret movie was almost two and a half hours long.
What?
And I think that secret movie wanted to be in theaters and wanted to break through the zeitgeist, and that's called Primitive War, which is a Vietnam War era movie starring Jeremy Piven, of course.
What?
And it's about American soldiers in Vietnam who come across dinosaurs, and now they're fighting dinosaurs.
That movie was in theaters for a little bit. It was in theaters. It came out. Yeah, it was out for like a week, maybe 2 weeks.
Sounds about right.
I was about to rent that for this segment, but then I was like, almost two and a half hours. Oh, what's Tin Soldier doing today?
You have to know, when you're getting De Niro only for like a couple days, unless you're David O. Satan, you know that this is not going to go into theaters, right? Like, come on. Like, it's De Niro. At this point, he's just doing this stuff to, you know, keep the rent up on his seven restaurants.
I'll tell you what, Chris Cavan, I recall just this year, as a matter of fact, seeing the Alto Nights in theaters. So you never know what you're going to get.
I saw the theaters too.
But he's leading that. I'm saying you only have him for a couple days to do the side stuff. You're never getting that into like an actual big theater. It's not going to happen.
Chris is right because De Niro has like maybe 4 minutes in this movie.
Yeah.
Maybe five.
Not happening.
Who's got more screen time, him in this or Pacino in the new Gus Van Sant?
Mm-hmm. Oh shit. Maybe Pacino by a hair.
Oh wow. Okay. Holy smokes.
He's either way, Pacino's at least grabbed your attention in that role.
That's true.
My God.
So there you go. Secret movie, man. And that is going to bring us to the end of On Screen Live for this week. Of course, the week is just getting started here in the WHMU, of course. Tomorrow, We Hate Movies kicking off. You guessed it, the 2025 Halloween Spooktacular with an episode on Needful Things. This was a fun one. We're talking all sorts of Stephen King, a lot of Max von Sydow impressions, and Ed Harris yelling all around, of course. And you can get that guy commercial free on the Patreon, of course, the ad free tiers over on there, patreon.com/WeHateMovies. We're also on Thursday, one last little treat for you this week. That's right. This once in a lifetime coming up. It's a lifetime adjacent. It's a Fox made for TV movie from 1991 called The Haunted. And yes, It's a secret Ed and Lorraine Warren movie.
That's right.
I love it.
It's a, the Smurl case. But it's like a Rashomon thing, right? Like they remember it different than the new movie does.
Yes, they certainly remember it differently than the new movie does. Ed and Lorraine, not so much heroes of this one. But that is going to do it, folks. That's what's going on this week. OSL will return later this month, but not next Monday. So don't look for us then. But we will let you know when. We'll be back on the air. But until then, I've been Andrew Jupin.
Steven Sadak.
Eric Siska.
Chris Cabin.
Have a good week, y'all. Bye-bye.